Welcome back
to the Escape Collective Tour Daily Podcast. We have no Shoddy today, unfortunately, although I think he's around. At the very least, he's going to be around tomorrow. We may pull him back in. It was fantastic to have him on the show yesterday. I really enjoyed it. I hope you all did as well. Joining me tonight, it's down to three of us. It's the three of us for a while, actually. We may pull some other folks in, but for the most part, this is the core crew at this point. Johnny Long, how are you?
I'm good. I mean, you're about to introduce the other character we've got with us, who's just been pensively looking out over the mountains. And with the same facial expression as we've been documenting on our Instagram account, where it looks like he's not having a good time.
I'm having a lovely time. I am the wonky third prong in this trident, and I'm having a nice time. We are in Po at the moment, and what's happening is we're on some sort of promenade on not a cliff necessarily. I wouldn't call it a cliff. It's the
edge of a big hill.
Plateau.
And in fact, there is for any motorsport fans out there, we're at the top of, I think it's the Po Rally. I believe. I'm not really enough of a motorsport fan. We need Ronan. We need Ronan back. Anyway, quite a kind of a famous little view esplanade here. We're looking out over the Pyrenees.
Esplanade.
I didn't actually introduce you yet, Ian. I was trying to not do this 10 minutes in. This time. Ian Trellor.
I think they know who I am by now.
When you described yourself as the wonky prong,
There's no second guessing that. For the Tour Superfans, Po, where we are right now, we are sitting probably, I don't know, 50 metres vertically above the start of a time trial in the 2019 Tour de France. Where
lots of starts, actually.
Yeah, the start 2 years ago as well.
Oh, did it? I wasn't there, was I? So I'm just giving the colour that I know. In that year, Wout van Aert famously crashed into a fence and destroyed his hip.
Yeah.
So it's good to see that he's doing well and is not hip hobbled all these years later. Let's hear it for Wout and his hip.
Was that the one where the rod went through his leg?
And yeah, it was gross.
Gruesome picture. Yes.
It was not good.
It's quite amazing he's managed to come back to.
People
do all
just
this
forget
stuff.
That he yeah, was do. Like completely incapacitated for months.
Yeah, yeah. He was.
Yeah. And also where the Tour de France Femmes was.
Femme.
Sorry.
Ish.
Femme.
Yeah.
Not Avec Swift at the time.
No, but nope. Now it is.
Whatever the
it wasn't
opposite
the Tour
of
de France
Avec is
at that point either.
It was
La Course.
I'm just getting all sorts of things wrong. Day four might even be five, and I'm getting everything wrong. But anyway, so there was this was where La Course was that year as well. So yeah. It was a big day of racing.
Po has a long and storied history at the Tour de France. One of my early tours, I'm going to now forget which year, but it was maybe 2013, I think. I was in Po having a lovely dinner with, I believe it was a gentleman from the New York Times at the time, and we had to stop our dinner short because Frank Schleck had just tested positive for whatever he tested positive
for
that year.
Love that for him.
And Po is actually known as a place where lots of doping positives have happened. That's because it is often the location of a rest day. And lo and behold, some extra testing goes on rest days, and we often find out about it the night of a rest day. So yeah, lots of sort of sordid history here in Po, but also lots of great bicycle racing.
Someone with an Escape Collective hat is walking past at the moment.
Oh my Lord.
Which is, we love to see it. Hello. He doesn't have a microphone, so me saying hello and waiting for a response that the listeners will hear is going to do absolutely nothing. Hello.
Hello.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
This is actually... we would love to pretend this is just some random fan that has shown up, but this is my good friend Dave. And
sorry to disappoint.
Sorry to disappoint. A former... He's asking to sing.
It's 4th of July, so we've got to have the national anthem.
An old kind of semi-drunk man walking a dog just walked up behind us and first asked our friend Dave over here to sing a song. Dave refused, which is the right decision.
Correct.
And then he proceeded to ask us if we were on the radio. No, the answer was no. And then he proceeded to say, long live Russia, and he loves Putin. So that's fun.
It's an unpopular viewpoint at this precise moment in history, I'd say.
Wild.
Poor timing.
Really wild.
And I was just going to be excited because he had a dog, and I was hoping to interview another dog, but that didn't turn out because that dog belonged to a bit of a fan of Russia.
Jesus. Should we save the main story of the day before we even touched on what happened on stage today for after we eat our dinner that's just arrived?
Yeah. So, you know, we've gotten to the point of this podcast where we're going to take a quick break and eat some burger.
Jesper Philipsen won the stage today, by the way, again.
He did. Two times in a row. We'll be back to talk all about it.
Hello, this is Abby Mickey, host of the Wheel Talk podcast, and I'm here to convince you to sign up for membership for escapecollective.com. Now, the reason that this is important is because we are a membership-based media model, and that means that we are not beholden to sponsors, but it does come down to you, the members of escapecollective.com, which means that I'm here to try to convince you that it is worth your $11.99 a month, or you can save 30% off if you get a yearly membership. Escape Collective is your hub for all things cycling. There's just new stuff churning out every day, and the members of the Escape Collective make it possible. So thank you to everyone who's signed up. And please, if you're enjoying this podcast, if you enjoy what we do, then, you know, put your money where your ears are and sign up. Become a member. You can become a member at escapecollective.com/join. That's escapecollective.com/join. Thank you so much.
Sorry, listeners. I was just finishing some chippos.
Well, where did we leave people? We left people with some mild to moderate Russian propaganda. And I think we should roll it back a little bit. Because actually what we were about to do is say hi to our friend Dave over here, who is a former producer.
And he's just about to take a bite.
NBC. So the reason he's just about to take a bite. The reason why Dave and I know each other is because we worked alongside each other for, like 7-ish years at the tour back in the day.
That's right.
You've moved on to bigger and better things, but how's it feel to be back?
It feels really good. I got my two kids right in front of me, Camila and Rafa. Got my wife next to me. It's kind of surreal, to be honest with you, but it's also kind of surreal to see you guys in the flesh, too, after listening to you for the last 5 years.
He's got his escape hat on. That's why we're letting him be on the podcast. It's very important.
How big a disappointment is seeing it all in real life and not the finished edited product?
Massive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Massive.
That sounds about right.
Correct. I always feared that.
Massive disappointment. No, I'm just kidding. It's incredible. You are taller than I expected,
right?
All right, we should talk about the bike race. Dave, can we have our microphone back, please? We're going to let those guys have dinner, family dinner over there. Ian, wait, why am I asking you this? I go to Johnny for this. Johnny, who won the bike race today?
I don't know. I never know.
Ian was busy wandering outside, like staring at clouds that were shaped like Norwegian people he recognised or something. Jesper Philipsen won the bike race again. A superlative lead out from Mathieu van der Poel, who is turning into the best lead out guy ever, who just sort of does his own sprint, and then Jesper Philipsen just tucks in behind and wins the stage.
Yeah, he just puts his own finish line at about 100 metres to go. And wins that sprint.
Yeah, they should have thought this before.
Yeah.
They could have been winning everything. I mean, I think I saw a stat where Jesper Philipsen has won his last 4 bunch sprints now at the Tour.
I mean, I think this was the plan last year, but remember, anybody who either watched the Tour last year or watched the Netflix special knows that Van der Poel had some issues.
Yeah, he was overcooked from the Giro.
Super overcooked.
Messed up his prep.
Yep.
Caleb Ewan was a close second. He was seeming confident at the bus. He's gone third and second. That would be huge for him.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things to me is we have now exited Spain. We had previously posited that perhaps the sort of chill vibes were a Spanish thing, and yet the chill vibes remain. I don't really know why. Every tour I've ever covered, when sprinters lose, they are grumpy as hell. They are pissed about it. And I don't really understand why we had, like, chatty chats with Mark Cavendish and Caleb Ewan today, both of whom lost the bike race. I don't understand what's happening.
Caleb Ewan is usually pretty good for a chat, to be fair.
Yeah, he's quite level-headed.
Yeah.
Sometimes he'll storm onto the bus if things have gone wrong and not come back out, but there was enough of a presence outside the bus for him to come back out. I think maybe it's also because all these top guys going for it have all won stages before. I know that it's always like, you know, you stay competitive and that's how you remain at the top and at that level, but maybe they also realise it's not the end of the world if they don't win, because there's also so many more stages to come.
That's what I was about to say, is maybe it's because there actually are a lot of sprint stages this year. There are, Cav says 5 guaranteed sprint stages. I actually think it's probably 6. But he probably knows better than me.
I also think that the English-speaking cohort of sprinters that we're talking to are getting older. Like, they're less temperamental. They're
true.
Aging. They're becoming fathers. They're becoming a little bit...
Yeah.
Little bit wiser or cool-headed, maybe. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
Maybe
just
the game's changed.
Up.
And also, you have guys in there like Wout van Aert, so it's not just all these big... fastman egos there, because you know that there's a guy who can do it all, and he then also will like lead the yellow jersey up a mountain, so it kind of humbles you a bit.
I mean, that's Cavendish has sort of hinted at that a couple different times. He did again today. He was talking specifically about the Limoges finish that's coming up, where most of the time finishes in Limoges are sprint stages. I think the last time it finished there, it was a Kittel versus Brian Cockard photo finish, if I remember correctly. But this time, it's like a 1 kilometer at 4% drag. Mm. And Cav was basically saying, like, well, you know, maybe that would have been for us a couple years ago. But with the guys that exist now, basically saying Van der Poel and Wout van Aert, like, we don't stand a chance. So I do think there's maybe something to that as well. I think there's probably a combination of all these things. But it is still unusual. It is unusual that we are getting such chatty sprinters. Like... I don't know. I've been doing this for quite a while now, and in general, the sprinters are the most kind of hot and cold when you talk to them, right? Like, I think that most of the GC riders are pretty measured. I think you have to be pretty measured. I also think that if you get to the top of a mountain, and I kind of mentioned this in a newsletter that I sent out yesterday, you get to a top of a mountain, and if you got dropped, it's because you got dropped. It's because you couldn't go any faster.
Yeah.
And it's not really your fault. It's not anybody's fault. You just couldn't go any faster. And I think in sprinting, there are decisions that are made that affect winning and losing. And I think that's maybe why some of these guys beat themselves up a little bit more, or a little bit more angry. It's if I made this slightly different call, I could have won this bike race. And that leads to, I don't know, a bigger explosion at the finish line.
Yesterday you described it well, where you're like, sprinting is not an exercise contest, which is,
yeah,
I really enjoy that. I think also you have with the GC guys, you basically become like a monk, you know. You have to drive any sort of personality out of your soul in search of those marginal gains, whereas the sprinters have always been the guys who are a bit flashier, you know.
Yep.
You got to have a bit of that swagger about you, because it's all about intimidation as well. And yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't complain. Like, I don't think it's
I'm
a complaint that, yeah. Yeah, you're not complaining, but I mean, I think it's great that there's like more good vibes around, because at the end of the day, it is a Tour de France, but it's also just the Tour de France, you know. It's supposed to be enjoyable, it's supposed to be entertainment, and if there's a level of like, oh, you know what, there's always another day, then I think that's probably good.
Yeah, I do wonder if as we get closer to the final opportunities for Mark Cavendish, we see a slightly different Mark Cavendish. Actually, Mark Renshaw, who I'm assuming everybody has seen this, but Renshaw is at Astana. He got pulled into Astana right at the last second to sort of, I don't know, sprint coach. We initially thought...
Consultant.
Based on the headline, we thought he was literally going to kit up and be a lead-out man.
Great.
It was, which is fantastic. That, of course, is not happening. But he is consulting on sprinting. He's kind of hinted at that as well. Like, he's kind of said, well, I don't really know how he's going to react going
forward. And before Cavendish has come back to the bus and they're asking Renshaw for a quote on how it's gone, he's like, I better just check with Mark first. Because it's like, there's still that... That's the thing with Cavendish, is that there's always... You never know which one of them is going to come back.
Yep.
And maybe we've just flipped the coin so many times and just landed on the happy side so many times. And it's going to lull us into a full sense of security. And then one day, one of us is just going to get our heads bitten off. And
oh, guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
That's definitely
I hope
happening.
It's not me.
It'll be Ian.
I'll just waft over to him with some whimsy and see how that goes for me.
Well, yeah, well, Ian came into this tour. And if he had a pre-race press conference, he would have said, which he did say, that his goal this tour was just to make friends and sort of charm people. He said it on the podcast. And And that would be the sort of, you know, that would be the fall after the rise, because today was the peak.
Yeah, to be fair, I think my strategy is working pretty well for me, Johnny.
It's like you've taken a 4-minute gap on the rest of the field. It's worked unbelievably well.
Today, Ian made a friend.
Maybe three friends, possibly four friends.
Explain how you made all your friends, Ian.
Okay, so my first friend that I made 3 days ago, time is a blur, was Adam Yates's dog, Zoe, a Samoyed. We know Zoe. We love
this
Zoe.
The Trojan dog.
In the article that I wrote about Zoe after interviewing Zoe, the Samoyed, I identified Simon Yates's dog as being called Tinker, which an honest transcription choice.
Perhaps he was a huge fan of Tinker Juarez.
Maybe. I don't know.
But then what happened this morning?
What happened this morning is that I was walking. We were walking from our...
All three of us were.
All three of us walking from our car park. And
accosted.
I would also say that the other boys are not as into just being nice to strangers in the way that I am.
Are you talking about me and Johnny?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, when we saw Adam Yates's partner walking with a dog? Yeah.
With the dog.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, it's the start of the day. She's going to have to go into a start village.
Yep. But I was like, no, this is how I'm choosing to live my life. So I just greeted the dog. and then we struck up a conversation, and it became apparent that all of the Yateses, parents included, were aware of the article. And there was this very specific bone to pick. I had misunderstood what Simon Yates's dog was called. It was not Tinker. It was Ticker. Which seems a strange name for a miniature poodle, but... As I found out, it is named after the tikka masala curry because the dog was an apricot-coloured poodle when it was born and then became a white poodle.
We haven't quite got to the bottom of how happened, maybe that's a natural thing that happens. I've never heard of it.
I've never heard of it either, and we did press the issue.
We pressed the issue quite hard. We used some journalistic integrity here.
We asked a couple of times in different ways whether Simon Yates had peroxided his dog. But that wasn't the case. Apparently, au naturel. So, anyway, because it became clear that Adam's partner, Lisa, hello if you're listening, had copped a bit of flack. And also, actually, because I'd called the dog Tinker in my article, other outlets had taken that and run with it in their articles about the dog, pretending that that was their original reporting. So across the English language, maybe
caught,
international sphere.
Caught red-handed.
Caught red-handed. They're just 4K. Like, oh yeah, Simon's got a dog called Tinker. and it had just spread, my bad reporting.
I feel like part of this is down to Australian and British accents.
Yeah, I think it was just down to...
Tinker and Tinker sound quite a bit more similar coming out of your mouths than they do out of my mouth.
But also, why would you name your dog after a curry?
Why not?
Yeah,
if
fair.
It looks like it.
Fair. I have a cat named after a
I don't think it's
bird.
That weird. I think there's probably quite a lot of British people that have named their cats and dogs after dishes.
Yeah, okay.
I reckon.
A German shepherd called Rogan Josh.
Well, if not, that's what I'm naming. I'm going to get a German shepherd when I get home and call it Rogan Josh.
A gerbil named Bouillabaisse.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. More food names in the pet world. Anyway, so I needed to retract my misnaming of Simon Yates'
dog. Retract and correct and apologize.
So we held a press conference.
Slash hostage video.
Slash hostage video, and I retracted it. And
if you haven't seen this, go check out the Escape Collective Instagram. The press conference.
Ian's got acting chops, is what I will say.
The press conference is on our Instagram.
With an assist from Johnny, who played the harassing reporter. And it really could have gone either way. I didn't know whether the Yateses would take it in the spirit it was intended, which was shit-stirring, but good-natured.
Yeah.
But Simon Yates waded into the comments, which was more than we could expect. It could be expected. And he said, after a few moments of deep sadness, Ticker has finally come to terms with your mistake and has accepted your apology. As you can imagine, she is quite a spicy dog, so things could have gotten quite nasty.
What I like there as well is that you use spicy as an adjective
yep.
to describe, like, people, situations. So you and Simon Yates have more in common than I would have ever thought.
So now I'll have a new friend at the buses tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, where you walk over familiarity and then he just looks at you blankly like...
No, but the thing is, this was mask off.
He knows what you look like now.
He knows what I look like, but tomorrow he won't know what I look like because I'll be wearing a mask.
Oh, I see.
You have to pull it down slowly.
Maybe we'll draw the mustache on over the top of the mask.
Yeah, perfect. Or I could just wear the same stinky outfit that I wore today. So that there will be some element of recognition.
Well, Ian, I'm really glad that you're making friends.
Thank you. I'm glad too.
I also think it's worth saying out loud that when we first launched Escape Collective, we talked quite a lot about sort of taking the serious things seriously and the unserious things unseriously. And I think this is a perfect example. Like, if David Lepartien was at the start tomorrow, you would not be friends.
Wouldn't ask him about his dog.
Nope. But when things like this happen and dogs are funny, lean into it. There's a lot of cars going by.
For any Melbourne listeners, we are on the equivalent of Chapel Street, which is where the boy racers go with their Subaru WRXs and just drive laps.
It's in homage to the motor racing circuit the stage finished on today.
You really brought that back. Well done.
Yeah.
Thank you.
From Chapel Street to the Tour de France.
Should we pull it back to some bike racing? Now that we've gone on them.
Someone's
now revving a
shitty Citroen van.
A Citroen Kangoo, no less.
I'm impressed. Are you not impressed?
With the Citroen Kangoo?
Yeah, and his right toe's strength.
Yeah, fine.
I'm not impressed. I hated it.
No, let's move back.
What do you want to talk about with the bike race?
I think that there were some serious crashes for the first time.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is interesting because I was sitting watching the finale. I was watching on Lionel Burney's phone because I couldn't see the big screen. And also near us was Mitch Docker. And I like talking bike racing stuff with Mitch because Mitch was a pro bike racer for a long time. And I basically sort of asked the question. I was like, did you find racing on motor circuits as weird as it looks? And also, like, I've raced on a couple different car tracks and I always found it kind of weird and dangerous because the corners are strange. They change radius in the middle, and they're really wide and in places. And it's just, you're used to racing on roads, and these aren't roads, right? I was like, Mitch, did you find this as weird as I did, and did you find it dangerous? And his answer was like, yeah, I did. I found it because it's not what you're used to. It's not what the peloton is used to. So then we went and asked a bunch of riders about this, a bunch of sprinters about this, and it basically came back that they agree. And I think we saw it kind of borne out in the finale, which was we had a bunch of pretty nasty crashes. In fact, the race's medical communique just came across. Fabio Jakobsen has a bunch of contusions. Jacopo Guarnieri, has a traumatisma.
And he had small fractures to three of his ribs as well.
So that was right clavicle.
That does
sound traumatic.
Yeah. He has another fracture and was evacuated to the hospital in Po. So that's no good. And then Luis Leon Sanchez has another left clavicle break of some sort and was also removed to the hospital in Po. So a bunch of nasty crashes in the last couple kilometers on a circuit which, on paper, if you just look at it, looks easy and looks safe. And yet, we end up with basically the exact opposite, and a lot of the riders saying, well, yeah, that's kind of how it goes. Like, if you have these big wide corners, we're six wide instead of two wide, and crashes are basically caused by people passing each other, there's just more passing going on. So it's an interesting kind of counterintuitive thing from finishes like this.
Bigger groups, too, on the road. No space to pedal really fast around corners.
Well, and the rest of the stage was so slow.
That too, so everyone's fresh.
Phillips had mentioned that in his press conference, that it was so slow that everyone was super fresh. Everyone was trying to pass everybody else. Everyone was trying to steal positions from everybody else. And you end up with a situation like we saw, which is a bunch of sort of like weird kind of touch a wheel, weird crashes, including one with your mate.
My mate.
He's a Norwegian guy with a name that I cannot say. Go ahead.
Søren Varenskjold.
Yep, that one. And there's a photo of him in our photo library, and Corvoss, one of our photographers, where he's hanging onto his handlebars still, his front wheel is pointed straight, and his handlebars are pointed 90 degrees to the right. He's obviously about to fall down. Bad news.
In technological terminology, I would say that his bike was pretty rooted.
I think you said fucked earlier.
Yeah, but yeah. There are children around.
They're gone.
Doesn't mean... my children will be listening.
They listen?
Yeah.
Ah.
It's a little glimpse of dad from afar.
Ah. I'm sorry.
It actually got to the point last time I was at the Tour de France that they were listening to the podcast that we were putting out, which had your face on it.
Ah.
And they began looking at the picture of your face and saying, Daddy...
I've come to steal your children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good.
So if I just showed up and was like, you're my children now, would they follow me?
Probably.
Like ducks?
Yeah. I mean, there's a familiarity of face, a familiarity of voice. The voice is a very powerful tool.
It's just true, actually. That's true. Neither of you have congratulated me yet today.
Oh, I'm so sorry, mate.
It's a special day. It's a big special day. It's somebody's birthday today.
Tried to play the American National Anthem when we were just standing in public earlier in the Start Village, and I, even though you're my boss, I turned around to you and quite sternly was like, Kaylee, no.
It was pretty embarrassing.
This is France. Like, not long ago, they were probably, in their minds at least, they were burning down like MacDos when they sprouted up.
Johnny has had a bit of an embarrassed streak today that I've detected. There was that moment. There was also a moment when we were at our hotel, and I complimented our hotel on the password to the Wi-Fi, which was hotel.
I was just worried they were going to take offense to it rather than
Johnny,
see the funny side.
Johnny actually said under his breath, Ian.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to me. Okay, I'll turn over a new leaf tomorrow.
We're never going to see any of these people again. This is the joy of it. Embrace it.
Okay, fine.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. It's Dries De Bont's birthday today.
Is who?
It's Dries De Bont's birthday today.
Without... Do you meaning rude, is he in the race in this year? No. He's not? Okay, good.
No. He is an active rider, though.
Yeah, he's an active rider.
He turns 32 today.
He's very blonde, I think, as well. I think he's so blonde, it looks like his skin continues onto his hair.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really spoken with him.
Why would you? Other than to tell him happy birthday.
Well, to our American listeners out there, happy 4th of July. I hope you're enjoying some lovely...
Fireworks and barbecue.
We found a playlist on Spotify today that was
disastrous.
Wasn't great.
It was like fuck yeah America barbecue or something like that.
I salvaged it with a few tracks from the Chicks and then transitioned into regular human music.
Yeah, we had a drive listening to like second era emo and Kaylee fell asleep in the backseat.
As soon as we started talking and listening to it, Kaylee realized what we're talking about. I was like, and he's like, oh, no. And then just fell asleep.
I'm out. But you guys didn't get a picture, so there's no proof.
There's no proof.
Oh, sad for you.
You know what the sad thing is? Before we got into a tangent, I had a point about the bike race, which the listeners probably may have appreciated, but now it's completely gone. No idea. Literally, I've been desperately racking my brain.
That's all right. It's almost time for us to wrap up, actually. It was a sprint stage today. You know what? We made a promise to ourselves before the race started that we would not talk about boring stages. Because I don't... Like, fundamentally, there's no such thing. As we have expressed on this podcast, we had a very interesting day. It didn't involve watching the bike race very much, but it was a very interesting day.
It was multifaceted.
So, you know, on sprint stages where... the entirety of the stuff that happened can be compressed into about 5 minutes. That's how much we will talk about.
It can't be wall-to-wall action every day because otherwise it wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work.
The point I was going to make is that after we've been speaking in previous years about how the racing's changed and how it's like they just race from the gun and it takes ages for the brake to go, this year we've seen it sort of fall back to more traditional tour rules of like, okay, today we're just going to pedal at 38 kilometers an hour and then we'll sprint because that's what regular people do.
Well, I think maybe that's partly down to the route again. Yeah. Like, you've got these sort of very specific stages where they're going to have to rest. Like, they had to rest, particularly today, because yesterday I think it was actually relatively hard. Because tomorrow, here's a good segue, tomorrow we go into the Pyrenees. We are sitting in Pau. We're looking out to the south. toured the Pyrenees. La Ronde, where the finale is tomorrow, is actually just straight out. It's starting to get dark now. I can't really see, but it's basically in a little notch straight out there. We've got Ore Category Climb tomorrow. We've got the Col de Marie Blanc, and then a pretty tricky little... A fast descent down into the finish. So it's going to be it's a real mountain day tomorrow.
Real mountains, real tour.
Real mountains, real tour. It's here.
Less banter about the Yates' dogs.
Maybe slightly. Yeah,
now we're going to have to talk about Vingegaard, Pogacar, who's going to win the tour.
Yep. That's fun,
fine.
Though.
Fine. Yeah, it'll be, that's yeah.
Fun. A new fun
variety
thing every day. Every day. Our Russian mate's back. I think we're going to ignore him. So, I think it's time now to throw over to Jose Bain.
The first Ours category climb is on the menu today. It's the Col de Soudet, but we start on the flat roads of Pau, home of many rest days and also doping rates. We are in the Pyrénées Atlantiques, where they love their birds. On a plate, that is. Foie gras is still pretty big here, and stuffed necks of geese or duck and breasts of pigeons or ducks are favourites in the many restaurants. Another specialty of the region is the sauce béarnaise, which, according to my cooking knowledge, doesn't go with the aforementioned birds. The sauce is named after the Béarn region, where we start the stage, and goes well with red meats, especially beef and veal, but also with fish like salmon. Béarnaise sauce is derived from the classic French sauce known as Hollandaise. This has nothing to do with us Dutch people. Hollandaise sauce is made by combining egg yolks and clarified butter, but Béarnaise sauce incorporates additional flavours such as tarragon, shallots and vinegar, or a white wine reduction. These additional ingredients give Béarnaise sauce its distinctive taste and aroma. Well, with our steak Béarnaise, we need wine. In the 14th century, the princes of Béarn and the Parliament of Navarra, just across the border in what we now call Spain, introduced the notion of cru, vintage. These were the first attempts at classification in wines in France, according to the value of the plots. It was to serve as a protection to preserve the authenticity of the wines of the Jurançon, the wine region we are racing in. And it was a pretty important wine too. In 1553, when Henry, King of Navarra, the future King Henry IV, was born in Pau, his little baby lips were rubbed with a clove of garlic and moistened with a drop of Jurançon. I do not make this up, honestly. Nowadays, there are hotels, boulevards and wine named after one of Pau's most important residents ever. Well, we end our meal of stuffed goosenecks, steak béarnaise and Jurançon wine with a cheese platter at the finish line in La Ronde. They have a cheese fair every year in October where they celebrate the cheese and the shepherds. The village puts on its best party clothes and revives the tradition of the province of Béarn. They do this after summer because in the warm months the sheep, goats and cows move to higher pastures. They come back down in September. This process is called transhumance, and you see it in all mountain areas in France. The pride of the region is Ossau Irrati cheese. There's even a competition for the best cheese of the year. This cheese is made from full-fat sheep's milk and slightly nutty in taste. The Ossau has been an AOP, an indicator of a product from that region only, since 1980, and is still made in the traditional way. The milk is brought to the chalet by the shepherds at a high altitude. The cheese is made there, after which the avineur let the cheese ripen for 4 to 6 months. It's not a cheese for the die-hard cheesonista. It's actually often used on a cheese platter. This cheese of the French Basque Country is also exported widely. I even noticed it at my local Albert Heijn supermarket right here in the Netherlands.
Despite having just eaten, I am now once again hungry. Thank you to Jose. Yeah. I'm peckish, very peckish. Peckish. Thanks to Jose for making me hungry again, I suppose. Let's get over to Abby Mickey. There was quite a bit that happened over at the Giro today, including a crash for one of the major contenders. Let's get to Abby.
Stage 5 was the Queen stage, a pretty short race, 105.6 kilometers, with a Category 1 climb early in the day and then multiple Category 3 climbs later on in the stage. It was won by Antonia Niedermayer of the Canyon SRAM racing team. She won solo by 9 seconds over Annemiek van Vleuten, and a group of three came in to take the final podium spot. Nieve Fischer-Black finished third, but there was a massive shakeup in the general classification, with Elisa Langenbergini going down on the pretty hard on a descent, finishing multiple minutes down and definitely out of the GC. Not sure if she's going to race the sixth stage. Keep an eye on escapecollective.com. There will be an update on there whether or not she's going to continue racing. But cross the finish line with Sharon Van Enroy, like arm in arm, which was a very touching moment.
Seeing her go away on that climb, just because, like, racing her, I know that she is a little bit timid when it's a big group. So whenever she can, she always likes to be in a smaller group. So it's a good way to do it.
When Niedermayer went, she went with Fischer-Black, actually, and the two of them just blew by a group of two that was Juliette Labou and Sylvia Persico. And they went by them so fast, and Fischer-Black couldn't quite keep up with the young German rider, only 20 on Canyon SRAM. But from behind, Annemiek did the classic thing where she's like, okay, well, I don't want to chase, so I'm just going to attack. And it was her and Elisa Longaborghini, and they got really, really close to catching Niedermayer. They were about like 13 seconds, I think, at the top of the final climb. Van Vleuten went over the top of that climb with like 3 seconds on Elisa. And going down the descent, they were definitely sending it. And Van Vleuten went down, but she was fine. She kind of just popped back up, got on her bike. And then Elisa went down on almost the exact same spot, just a little bit earlier in the corner. And it took her minutes to kind of get back onto her bike. It was not a fun replay to watch, that's for sure.
No, I'm just pleased that she was able to get back on her bike because, yeah, that's never good. Those high-speed crashes on descents, it's... Even though she's in a lot of pain, it's still the fact that she could still even comprehend getting back on her bike is a good thing.
The GC is really quite distant now for pretty much everybody is 2 minutes behind Van Vleuten, 2 minutes plus behind Van Vleuten. Niedermayer is now in second, 2 minutes and 7 seconds down, with Veronica Urs like barely holding on to third. She got dropped on that first climb. She caught back on with the group when Niedermayer was already up the road. And ended up finishing in that group of three, which was a massive ride for her to hold on to third overall because, yeah, she almost lost it today.
That's a pretty exciting stage. It's really good to see Antonia win. She was on the Canyon SRAM Generation team last year, and she moved up this year with Canyon SRAM team. And it's just really cool to be able to see a rider that has been given that opportunity to kind of use out those 2 years in the Generation team to develop. And then, 20 years old winning a Giro stage is pretty impressive, and potentially being on the podium as well. It just kind of shows how important the grassroots is of the sport, and there's all this talent coming up, and you just need to be able to nurture it. And Germany have got their new star rider coming up.
If there is going to be a stage for the breakaway, tomorrow might be it. Although Mariana Voss is hunting that 33rd career Giro victory. So,
looking at it, it's a breakaway day. So potentially Voss might try and get in there. It's not really going to be one that the GC needs to control. Yeah, I reckon there'll be a lot of Uno X jerseys trying to get in that breakaway tomorrow. I hope so anyway.
We'll see. But Hannah, thanks so much for chatting with me. We'll be back tomorrow, stage 6. If you want more information on the Giro Donna or to hear some rider diaries from riders on the ground at the Giro, head on over to the Wheel Talk podcast feed for a chat with me, Hannah Barnes, and some audio diaries from Veronica Urs herself, Nina Kessler of the Jayco Alula team, Nieve Fischer-Black of SD Works, Sarah Roy from Canyon SRAM, and Loretta Hansen of the winning team, Lidl Trek. Thanks so much.
All righty, gentlemen. Well, it's about time for us to wrap up. We've just about run out of rosé. We have eaten our dinner. We have talked about all the bike racing. Tomorrow, we go into the Pyrenees. A real, true general classification day. It's not a mountaintop finish tomorrow. Like I said, it is a sort of descent into the finish, but it is nonetheless going to be, I think, a fascinating one. My guess tomorrow, and I think I put this in the preview, is this, it'll be less about Pogacar and Vingegaard and more about
Felix Gall.
Yeah, just a bunch of B-level guys trying to hang on. It'll be like, which ones can hang on, I think.
I think it'll be about the friends we make along the way.
Who can hang? Always an important question.
Are you going to be rooting for Simon Yates now? Now that he's commented on Instagram?
All it takes is one comment. All takes any other riders out there.
Yep. Just the slightest hint of acknowledgement that I exist. maybe a little bit more than before, when I was not a Yates head. And I wouldn't say that I am now, but...
Rod Ellingworth likes to call them both the Yates twins because they're at a Spanish race once and someone couldn't pronounce their name, so they were the Yates twins.
Simon
Yates. I can't believe I only just remembered that during the outro. God, I'm rubbish.
Was it our friend Chris Marshall Bell who was like on the podcast for about 5 seconds the other night who wrote a whole story about, was it about Simon?
Yeah.
Or Adam? I can't remember.
God. It was certainly one of them.
He definitely wrote about one of them, and it was basically the crux of the story was that they're not the most interesting with us.
They other riders swear by them being great fun,
but
when
like
you're
sneaky
out on
funny.
Teammates say they're hilarious, and we have never really seen the more human side of either.
I respect
Yates.
Them keeping it to themselves and not letting everyone else in.
So kind you of respect do. Them less now that they've engaged with us on Instagram.
Kind of, yeah.
And that's where we're different.
All right, let's wrap it up. We'll be back tomorrow, I think probably from the finish in the role. And yeah, we'll talk about whatever happens in the bike race. I enjoyed this. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
And the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Hold it. Oh, you gotta hold it longer than that.
I've already done enough.
Thank you.